So today we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 13, entitled Dhritarashtra Quit Soam, text number 50. Nishpaditam Deva Krityam Avashesham Pratikshate Tavadyuyam Avekshadvam Bhavedyavadiheshvaraha Nishpaditam performed. Deva Krityam. What was to be done on behalf of the demigods? Avashesham. The rest. Pratikshade. Being awaited. Tavat. Up to that time. Yuyam. All of you Pandavas. Avekshadvam. Observe and wait. Bhavet. Me. Yavat. As long as. Iha. In this world. Ishvaraha. The Supreme Lord. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The Lord has already performed His duties to help the demigods and He is awaiting the rest. You Pandavas may wait as long as the Lord is here on earth. Purport. The Lord descends from His abode, Krishna Loka, the topmost planet in the spiritual sky, in order to help the demigod administrators of this material world when they are greatly vexed by the Asuras, who are envious not only of the Lord, but also of His devotees. As referred to above, the conditioned living beings contact material association by their own choice, dictated by a strong desire to lord it over the resources of the material world and become imitation lords of all they survey. Everyone is trying to become an imitation god. There is keen competition amongst such imitation gods. And such competitors are generally known as asuras. When there are too many asuras in the world, then it becomes a hell for those who are devotees of the Lord. Due to growth of the asuras, the mass of people who are generally devoted to the Lord by nature and the pure devotees of the Lord, including the demigods in higher planets, pray to the Lord for relief. And the Lord either descends personally from His abode or deputes some of His devotees to remodel the fallen condition of human society or even animal society. Such disruptions take place not only in human society but also among animals, birds or other living beings, including the demigods in the higher planets. Lord Shri Krishna descended personally to vanquish asuras like Kamsa, Jarasandha and Shishupal, and during the reign of Maharaja Yudhishthira, almost all these asuras were killed by the Lord. Now He was awaiting the annihilation of His own dynasty called the Yadu Vamsha, who appeared by His will in this world. He wanted to take them away before His own departure to His eternal abode. Narada, like Vidura, did not disclose the imminent annihilation of the Yadu dynasty, but indirectly gave a hint to the king and his brothers to wait till the incident happened and the Lord departed. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachamam Bangum Nagayate Girim Yat Kripadamam Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudevi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So here in this text, Narad Muni, he is instructing King Yudhishthira. So in this chapter we have heard how this chapter is entitled Dhritarashtra Quits Home, and so far in the chapter he has already quit home along with Gandhari and Vidura also went. So here, Narada Muni is instructing Maharaj Yudhishthira about the reality of life. So because Maharaj Yudhishthira was very much affected by Dhritarashtra and Gandhari's leaving home, so he was lamenting a lot. So here, in these texts, Narada Muni is giving Maharaj Yudhishthira very cutting instructions. So here, in this verse and the previous verse, it's mentioned that Narada Muni is hinting to Maharaj Yudhishthira that the mission of the Lord is almost over and the Lord is about to depart to his own, to the spiritual world. So we know in the Gita it says, Yada yada hi dharmasya glani bhavati bharata abhyutha nami dharmasya tadatma nam sijamiham. So Krishna appears, the external reason for Krishna's appearing is when there is too much disturbance in society. So when there is, when society is not favorable for spiritual life, then Krishna appears. So because Krishna's mission was almost over, so he was about to leave, and Narada Muni is hinting this to Yudhishthira Maharaj. So he didn't want to directly tell him what was going to happen, because that's not a very palatable news. We don't like to hear about someone who is about to pass away, or someone who has passed away, who is someone who is very dear to us. So in the same way, Narada Muni didn't want to tell Yudhishthira directly what was about to take place, that the Yadu dynasty was going to be annihilated. So here in the purport and in the previous verse, it's mentioned that the term Asura is used. So also, as I said, whenever there's disturbance on the planet in terms of religious principles, the Lord descends whenever and wherever. So Krishna comes to check that imbalance. And as we know, as it says in Bhagavad Gita, Ichha Dvesha Samuthena Dvandva Mohinam Bharata Sarva Bhutani Sammoham Sarge Yanti Parantaba. So Krishna says, O sky of Bharata, O conqueror of the four, all living entity are born into delusion, bewildered by dualities arisen from desire and hate. So in this verse, Krishna is giving the cause of the living entities fall down into the material world. So the fact there are so many conditioned living entities implies that all of them are bewildered by dualities arisen from desire and hate. So Ichha Dvesha Samuthena Dvandva Mohina Bharata Sarge Yanti Sarva Bhutani Sammoham Sarge Yanti Parantapa. Thank you. So because of this living entity's desire to lord it over material nature, or as Prabhupada mentioned in the purport, because of people's desire, the living entity's desire to be a god, or Prabhupada uses the term imitation god. Just like if you buy a software, there's so many kinds of imitation software. If for any product there will be an imitation, because there is a demand for that imitation. Otherwise it won't exist. So in the same way, there are imitation gods in this world. So an imitation god is someone who wants to be God. So God means God means Krishna. Krishna means the supreme enjoyer. So Krishna says, I am the supreme enjoyer, I am the supreme controller, I am the supreme creator, and I am the supreme proprietor. Isha Vasyam Idam Sarvam Yat Kincha Jagatam Jagat Tena Taktena Bhunjita Ma Gridya Kasya Svidhanam. So Krishna says, in the Isha Upanishad it says, everything animate or inanimate is controlled and owned by the Lord. And we are meant to use everything. We are meant to take things which are destined as our quota to engage in the service of the Lord. So everything is owned and controlled by the Lord, but because the conditioned living entities have this desire to become an imitation god, so that's why we all are here. So this verse in the Bhagavad Gita explains that Ichha Dvesha Samuthena. So the living entity desires to take Krishna's position. So So that's what the desire is. So there's a duality, there's a desire and hate. So the desire is to become the supreme enjoyer, controller and proprietor. And the hate is anyone coming in the way of that. So that's the desire and the hate. So people might not, in a very gross way, people might not say, yes, I'm God. Very rarely you meet people who say, I'm God. Especially if you're doing preaching. On a rare occasion, someone will say, yeah, I'm God. So you can ask them, if you're God, why are you working 9 to 5? You know, why are you going to the dentist? Why are you seeing a doctor? You should have full control over your body. Why are you subjected to those laws of nature? And what people hate is when people or imitation gods hate spiritual instruction. Or someone, when they come in their way. So they, in other words, the hate is the hate of Krishna's instructions. So, as is mentioned in this purport, or also it's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, there are two kinds of living entities in this world. From time immemorial, since the beginning of creation, there are two types of people, to broadly categorize them. One is Asura, and then the other is Asura. So we look at what Asura and Asura is. So Asura or a Devata or a demigod is a person, or is a mentality or a consciousness state of being in which one is not against the supremacy of God. That's Asura, basically. So Asura doesn't mean you have to be living in, you know, Swarga Loka, or you have to have a form like a Devata. But Asura is a mentality or consciousness that, yes, there is God, and not only God, Ishavasam Idam Sarvam, that God or Krishna has proprietorship over everything, and He's the owner and controller of everything. And we are a tiny living entity, we are the spirit soul, very minute, part and parcel of God. So someone who accepts that, they are Asura. They are a demigod, Devta. Someone who accepts the proprietorship of Krishna over everything. And they accept Krishna as God, and we have a loving relationship with Him. And we are meant to be God's servant. We are meant to be Krishna's servant. So someone who accepts that, they are a Devata. And not only accept that, but they have to act in that spirit also. Simply theoretical knowledge is not sufficient. Then an Asura is a person, he or she, in any planet, someone who doesn't accept the supremacy of God. They are against Krishna. So they can't stand to accept Krishna as Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in fact, in a subtle way, what they're saying, yes, I am God, and everyone should acknowledge me, acknowledge my existence as God. So there's broadly these two kinds of people in this world. Every one of us will fall in either of these categories. Either we are Asura or an Asura. So Krishna descends. So in this world, there'll always be these two people. So we can never say that this world will be full of saintly people. That will never happen. Because the reason this world is created, it is created for Asuras. That's why it was created in the first place. So this world is a prison house. It's, you know, every country, every state has a prison house. Like yesterday I was driving in front, this past the Melbourne Assessment Prison Center, which is on Spencer Street. So there's a prison right there, you know, it's a fairly big size prison. So that's where the prisoners are assessed, and then they are sent to various prisons within Victoria, depending on the severity of the crime. So every state will have a prison, every country will have a prison, because there will be some citizens who will rebel against the laws of the state. So the purpose of a prison is to reform them. That's the whole idea behind a prison. It's not simply to punish them, but to reform their wrong consciousness. So even when it comes time for parole, like if someone has lived their prison sentence for 5 or 10 years or whatever, then it comes time for parole, and then the judge will ask the what's the term for prisoner? Not a victim, but...
Convict.
Huh? No, convict is very serious. The prisoner, okay, in simple terms. We'll ask the prisoner, okay, have you reformed when it's time for parole? If the judge can see enough evidence, yes, this person has reformed, then they will let that person out in society so they can live, they won't cause disharmony in society. So in the same way, this material world is a prison. So we cannot expect that they'll be, you know, saintly persons. Of course, there's a Satya Yuga when predominantly most people are saintly. But most of the time, you'll find a lot of asuras in this material world. And the function of asuras is to Krishna explains the mentality of a demoniac person in the Bhagavad Gita. So a demoniac person doesn't mean he'll have two horns sticking out. You know, the typical conception of an asura, he has a tail sticking out, you know, very ferocious teeth. He'll be just like one of us, you know, living in society, driving a nice car or wearing a coat and a suit. So an asura is someone who basically denies God, Krishna, and he or she denies the scriptures. So they find it very hard to accept any kind of authority. So especially Shastric authority, they find it very difficult to accept. And we can see from time immemorial, such kind of living entities have existed. The Prabhupada gives the example of Jarasandha, Kamsa, Shishupal. And in modern day, we have Hitler, Mussolini, Stalin. There's so many asuras. So they are the leaders of the asuras. And even our current Prime Minister is an atheist, by the way, in Australia. So we see that when society is governed by people who are atheistic, there's all kinds of chaos. So Krishna also says in the 7th chapter, Namam Dushkitana Mura Prapadhyante Naradama Maya Aprita Jnanam Asuram Bhavam Ashrita. So these four kinds of living entities find it very difficult to surrender to God. In other words, these four kinds of living entities are asuras. Of course, one is Asuram Bhavam Ashrita. One is outright asura. So an asura or an atheist will, the atheist who is an asura, will outright decry God. So we see in Australia there is the Atheistic Society. Even in University of Melbourne where we have a club, there is an atheistic club also. Right? Yeah. University of Melbourne Atheistic Club. So they very outrightly decry God. And with their pen they write articles. Very powerful. So they publish journals, magazines through Facebook, social media and various other means. They outrightly decry existence of Krishna. So they are very envious of God and they say there's no God, you know. This world has no creator. It somehow by chance it happened. There's no cause and effect. By random mutation, by the atheistic theory of Darwin, somehow this world has come about. There's no controller, there's no purpose. The only purpose is to enjoy as much as you can. So they outrightly decry the presence of God, and anyone who's following, they'll criticize them. And they say, in fact, religion is the cause of all kinds of trouble in society. So what should be taken out of society is religion, because that's creating all the trouble. So you throw that out, and we'll make our own rules and regulations. We know what's best for people. So they propagate various kinds of isms or philosophies, capitalism, communism. It's all atheistic philosophy, you know, socialism, democracy. And then there are other kinds of asuras. There's the Namam Dushkitana Mura, Prapadyante Naradama. Dushkitana Mura, there's the Mura, or the foolish person, or the foolish ass. So if you see a donkey has no intelligence. A donkey can't, you know, there's like, a donkey likes to eat grass. So for a donkey, there's grass everywhere. So he doesn't think, you know, grass is right here, why do I have to work so hard? So just for a little bit of grass, it will work its butt off. It will work very hard. So in the same way, people are working so hard, and when it comes time for spiritual life, they say, no, I have no time. So they make so many other responsibilities as the prime responsibility of life, and they forget the prime responsibility. And they don't realize, they don't have to strive so hard to live in this world. And they create these false expectations and false burdens, and then they work hard to fulfill them, and then the consequence of that is there's no time for spiritual life. And the laws of nature also force the people to work hard, because they have ignored the prime purpose of the human form of life, which is to be Krishna conscious. Then there's the Naradama. Naradama is someone is like the worst of human beings, the lowest of mankind, because mankind has the intelligence to understand God. Mankind has the intelligence to understand Krishna. So they misuse their intelligence. They don't use it for spiritual life. Therefore, they are the lowest of mankind. They have the facility to be Krishna conscious, but they are not. Then there's the Maya Apritajnana, or those whose knowledge is stolen by illusion. So these people are the scientists, philosophers, artists, very kind of creative people, you know, financial advisors, various terms you can call them by. So they are the people who run society, they are the intelligent kind of people. But their knowledge is also stolen by illusion, because they misuse their knowledge for demoniac purposes. And then the atheists that outrightly decry God, whereas these other classes, indirectly they ignore the injunctions of Shastra, or they don't believe in Shastra. Also, some people say, you know, religion is a mythology. The spiritual life is a mythology. That's another way of saying, yes, I don't accept Krishna, I don't accept God. Or some will say, yeah, you know, religion, Krishna consciousness is not practical. You know, nice fancy stories, you know, whatever you're saying makes sense, but it's not practical. So that's another way of saying we don't accept Krishna. Or some will say, Krishna cannot be God. We all are God. So that's another way of decrying. So in various subtle ways, people decry the presence of God and the Shastra. So they say, why do you need a book for self-realization? You don't need knowledge, you don't need a book to tell you how to be self-realized. It's within you. Just open your heart, just look within, and you'll see the reality. You know, you are God, they are God, everyone is God. Why do you need a book to tell you how to be self-realized? It's your own personal affair. So in this, in a very tricky way, people, in a very fancy way, people will reject the scriptures and Krishna. So this is an atheistic mentality, or this is the asura mentality. And we see even in so many religions in the world, they are governed by atheistic people. So even in people take demoniac people, they take shelter of religion, because they know religion is a very powerful way of controlling people. So they know through religion you can get people to surrender, and you know, you can amass big amounts of money. So sometimes demoniac people, they take shelter of religion and they misuse religion, and the consequence of that is just chaos. And that's another reason why people hate religion, because people who are demoniac, they are rampant in religious societies. So it's the duty of in ISKCON to make sure that the right people lead the society. So in the 16th chapter, Krishna, there's a whole chapter dedicated to divine and demoniac natures. Krishna dedicates one chapter to that. So there he says, in the 4th verse, he says, he describes the qualities of a person who is demoniac. So we can see if we have these qualities or if they're present in society. So pride, Krishna says, pride, arrogance, conceit, anger, harshness and ignorance, these qualities belong to those of demoniac nature, O son of Pritha. So you can see this pride, or people make a show of religion, arrogance. You can see in society these qualities are very prominent today. People are very, very proud. any little bit of education they have, some qualities they have, and they become very proud. And the result of pride is they offend others. People get angry very quickly. Someone comes in their way, they get very angry. And they're very harsh. So we see atheistic people, demoniac people, they have put forward so many isms. A good example is capitalism. So they think we know how to figure out society. So they put capitalism. Capitalism is all about exploiting others. In essence, that's what capitalism is. Those who are in power, they will. It's, capitalism is about making profit and just exploiting people for your end. So whoever in capitalism, they establish ownership and proprietorship. So we see because they have thrown Ishavasya conception out and they have put forward so many laws, copyright, patenting, private ownership, public ownership. And in this way, people are in the illusion. They think, yes, everything belongs to us. And when there is ownership and proprietorship, that gives rise to greed. That gives rise to so much greed and corruption. So we see, whether it's democracy or in communism, the idea is, okay, everyone is equal and we'll try to help everyone. But in reality, it doesn't work like that because they've thrown out God, they've thrown out Krishna from the picture. So in theory, it sounds nice, but in reality, it doesn't work like that. So democracy is a manifestation of capitalism in which it's just exploiting each other. So these are all products of atheistic philosophy, asuric life. So Krishna says that transcendental qualities are conducive to liberation, whereas demoniac qualities bind one to bondage. So when we come to Krishna consciousness, it doesn't mean we have become a devotee. Suddenly we are pure, you know, just because we are wearing a sari or a dhoti or putting on tilak, have a shikha, doesn't mean suddenly we are pure. So these demoniac qualities are in everyone, and the reason we are performing sadhana bhakti is to purify ourselves. So it doesn't mean they'll just go away suddenly. So the good thing about us is we have accepted Krishna as supreme, and we have said that we are servant of Krishna, part and parcel. And we are trying to rectify our consciousness. But still, if we honestly look within ourselves, we'll find asuric traces within us also. So what are those asuric traces? Those asuric traces are it's again the same thing, is to Ichha Dvesha Samudhena. The conditioned living entity hates the instructions of Krishna. So that's the asuric trace. So the asuric trace is we can find it very difficult to accept what the spiritual master is saying. You know, spiritual master will give an instruction, but you know, find it hard to follow it, or find it hard to accept it, or find it hard to accept the regulations of the Shastras. So sometimes devotees can say, you know, yeah, we're trying to be Krishna conscious, but we can't be Krishna conscious all the time. We can't control our senses all the time. You know, sometimes we'll slip, and Krishna will understand that, because after all, we are a material person and we have a material body and we have material demands. Or we can say, yeah, you know, Jai Guru Maharaj, we whenever our spiritual master comes, we glorify him, but we find it hard to follow the instructions. So that's again the same asuric tendency. Or, you know, we can't follow Shastra all the time. We can follow some of the things or most of the things, but we can't follow all the things. We can follow some of the regs, but not all of the regs. Because we have a material body and, you know, we have to fulfill the needs of the body. We have these urges and we have to fulfill them. So, but if we do that, that will actually damage our relationship with Krishna. Because all these rules and regulations are there to establish a personal relationship with Krishna, to understand Krishna's personality. So we have to try to strictly, and we should see this tendency, every now and then it pops up because we are a conditioned soul after all. So we have to check this tendency by aligning ourselves with the desires of a spiritual master and with the Shastra. So this human body is compared to a boat. It's a favorable boat for crossing over the ocean of material existence. And the captain of this boat is the spiritual master. And the breezes are the Vedas are the favorable breezes. And all the facilities of this body, which come with this human body, are the favorable breezes. So we need a good captain in life. We need a good captain. If you have a bad captain, your ship will sink. Like we saw the Costa Rica, it sank because the captain stuffed it up. So we might have a good captain, but we have to align ourselves with the wishes of the captain, which is the spiritual master. So once we align ourselves with the desire and we make his desire as our desire, then we are treading on the safe path. Otherwise it's very, very risky. So we see whoever comes in contact with Krishna, they benefit. So because we are in contact with Krishna, we do benefit. So the process of sadhana bhakti, Krishna will try to take out these demoniac tendencies in us. And that might be a bit painful also in the beginning. So through devotees, through various kinds of arrangements, Krishna will try to take out these demoniac tendencies. And we have to cooperate with Krishna. It's like, for example, if you know, in swimming, if lifeguards, like when they try to save someone, usually the person who's drowning, they struggle. And they try to pull the lifeguard also down. So if they cooperate with the lifeguard, then they can, then it's easy to save them. So in the same way, if we cooperate with our spiritual master and Krishna, then it's easy to get purified. Otherwise it's a real struggle. So whoever comes in contact with Krishna, they get benefited. And we see even the various kinds of asuras like Jarasandha, Kamsa, Shishupal, when they came in contact with Krishna, they got benefited. In the 7th canto, Narad Muni instructs, he tells Maharaj Yudhishthira that whether you come in contact with Krishna out of fear or out of envy or hate or out of affection or out of duty, you achieve Godhead. That's what Narad Muni tells Maharaj Yudhishthira. You achieve the supreme abode. So we can see like asuras like Kamsa and Shishupala and Dantavakra, they were fully absorbed in the Lord. So they were not ordinary atheists. They were also atheists. They were outright atheists. They directly denied Krishna. And Dantavakra and Shishupala, they were actually conscious of the form of Krishna. They knew Krishna as a person. Why? Because they were all the time they were meditating on Krishna. Even Kamsa knew Krishna as a person. And he was 24/7 meditating on Krishna. You know, that Krishna, he looks like this. Anytime he can come and kill me. So 24/7, whether he was eating, sleeping, walking or sitting, even in his sleep he was thinking of Krishna. So he had this intense meditation on Krishna. Kamsa, even Shishupal, right from childhood, he was blaspheming Krishna. And even in the Rajasuya Yagya, we see how very strategically he waited till the Rajasuya Yagya starts so he can wreck the Yagya. And then he started blaspheming Krishna. So because they were absorbed in the form of Krishna, they still got benefit. They got benefit. So Krishna killed Kamsa, Krishna killed Jarasandha, Dantavakra was killed, and they all got benefited. They got mukti. So when one is absorbed in Krishna, Narad Muni says, if one is fully absorbed in Krishna, then they go back to Godhead. But of course they achieve the impersonal liberation of the Lord. They achieve the Brahman effulgence. So even if someone is inimically approaches Krishna, that's not bhakti because they are approaching Krishna with an unfavorable attitude. But if Krishna is approached with a favorable attitude and one is fully absorbed in Krishna, then one goes back to Godhead. So unfortunately Kamsa, Shishupala and Dantavakra, they were absorbed in Krishna with an unfavorable attitude, but they got Brahman liberation. So we can see that's the benefit of coming in contact with Krishna. Anyone who comes in contact with Krishna will be better off. There's no doubt about that. So Krishna says, whenever there are too many asuras in this world, he comes down personally to rectify the situation. Yada yada hi dharmasya. Whenever and wherever there's a decline in religious practice, Krishna says, I descend. If he doesn't descend, he'll send his avatars or he'll send his devotees to rectify the imbalance in the material world. So this imbalance takes place quite often. So even we see religion gets corrupt. So Krishna has to come again to re-establish things. Of course, that's not the real reason why Krishna comes. That's the external reason. The internal reason why Krishna comes is to give pleasure to his devotees. Because his devotees are anxious to serve him and see him, and they are in separation from him, so Krishna comes to satisfy them. That's the real reason. Because Krishna can vanquish the demons by simply his material energy, the SARS or, you know, rampant AIDS or big earthquake or tsunami. Everyone's finished. So Krishna comes to, really comes to satisfy his devotees. And to satisfy his devotees by serving them. Because he has that intimate relationship with them. So here also, it's said that, here Narad Muni is telling Yudhishthira that Krishna has already performed his duties. So Krishna has performed his duties of vanquishing the demons. So the purpose by external reason for coming, that's already been fulfilled. So the demons are vanquished. Since Krishna's childhood till the battle of Kurukshetra, so many demons were killed. And even Jarasandha, he came, I think, 17 or 18 times. He amassed his armies and fought against Krishna. And Krishna, very strategically, he got him to amass all these soldiers and he wiped them off. So the burden of the earth was reduced. And Bhumidevi had prayed to Krishna through Brahma that, you know, I'm overburdened at this stage and please come and help. So then Vishnu said, yes, Krishna will come and the burden of the earth will be reduced. So that function was done. That was accomplished. Now, it's mentioned that he is awaiting the rest. You Pandavas may wait as long as the Lord is here on earth. So now Krishna next wanted to annihilate his own dynasty, the Yadu Vamsha. Why? Because Krishna thought, the Acharyas give various reasons for the disappearance of Krishna's dynasty. And as we know, when Bhumidevi, Brahma was praying to Vishnu, Vishnu said, okay, I will appear in the families, I will appear on the earth as Krishna, and also all you devatas, you appear in various dynasties. So you can aid me in my pastimes. So the demigods also took birth in various dynasties to aid Krishna in his pastimes. So now Krishna's mission was over and he thought, you know, the Yadu dynasty is so powerful that no one can annihilate them. They are practically, no one can get rid of them. Because the Yadu Vamsha is my dynasty, so no one can get rid of them. And he knew that various demigods are also in that dynasty and they will get buffed up because of so much power and prestige. So in order to check that, Krishna thought, I have to annihilate my own dynasty. And anyway, my pastimes are over. I want to go back. And I want to take some of the pure devotees back with me or to the next place where I'm going to perform my pastimes. And the demigods should return to their abode. So he knew all this power will corrupt the demigods. So we see even Manigriva and Nalakovera, they are devotees, even Indra. But because of too much power and opulence, they got corrupt. So Manigriva and Nalakovera, because they were the sons of Kuvera, they were so wealthy, their mind got corrupt by all this opulence. And when they were bathing naked in the lake, and when Narad Muni was passing by, the damsels, they covered themselves out of shyness. And they realized, you know, a saintly person is coming. It can't be like this. But because they were intoxicated by their wealth, and they were even physically they were intoxicated, so they offended Narad Muni by ignoring him, by ignoring his presence. So we can see how opulence and wealth bewilders one. There's nothing wrong with money in itself or fame, but it's because we have these asuric tendencies, we are conditioned, they corrupt us. Too much money, too much power. So even Indra, same thing happened. Indra got carried away by his power, and he offended the Brajvasis by sending forth rain. So Krishna had to chastise him. So in the same way, Krishna knew the demigods will, their minds will get corrupted by all this power. So he thought, I have to get rid of them. So he thought the only way of getting, well, one way of getting rid of them is they annihilate each other. So he thought, okay, if they kill each other, they'll get rid of them. And even through one arrow, Krishna accomplishes many tasks. So Krishna thought, okay, the atheists, they think, you know, Krishna is not God, so I'll fulfill their desire also. So I'll leave my, Krishna said, I'll quit this world when an hunter shoots an arrow at me. So atheists will think, see, Krishna is not God. He died by an arrow. And the arrow just touched Krishna's foot. They don't see that Krishna lifted a hill and killed so many demons. They'll ignore all that. They'll say, see, Krishna died by an arrow. Krishna is not, how can he be God? So Krishna, to facilitate their desire and also to get rid of the Yadu Vamshas, the analogy is given of taking out a thorn with a thorn. In the 11th canto, that analogy is given. So if sometimes you have a thorn in your foot, you take out a thorn using something very sharp, or a needle, or another thorn. So Krishna thought, okay, to remove a thorn, we'll use another thorn. So we know the pastime of the Yadu Vamshas. They went to, was it Prayag? Sorry, Prabhas. Yeah, they went to Prabhas to perform some rituals. And there they had this putrefied rice. They had that and they got intoxicated. And there were these canes. This is whole pastime connected. And they killed each other with these iron rods. And that way the entire Yadu dynasty was annihilated. So Krishna did that to get rid of his demigods. So they go back to their original places, and they don't get, because money and power makes one puffed up. So Krishna wanted to get rid of them. So that's why Narada Muni didn't want to tell Maharaj Yudhishthira this news, that this is going to happen. So he refrained from that to give the bad news. As we also heard that bad news makes its way, we don't need to unnecessarily put someone in distress. So I'll just leave it here. You have any questions or comments on this verse? Yes, Prabhu.
So, when you talk about Brahma realization, then we see if somebody is coming to personal Brahma realization, they eventually come down. Then we see the Krishna killing Asura, Ramsa, Shishupal, they change, whichever. Do they also come down, fall down, or they stay? What happens?
Well, their case is special because they were cursed by the four Kumaras, and Vishnu sanctioned their curse, and they were asked, okay, so do you want to suffer first? I think you'll go to the material world for seven births, is it, or three births? Yeah, so they had to return to the spiritual world after three births. Yeah, some of them got impersonal liberation.
So they come down?
Yeah, as we understand, because they have no attraction to the lotus feet of the Lord, they will come down. Yeah, they get benefit, they get liberated, but in order to progress further, they need to be devotees. But if they're still opposed to the Lord, then in the sat feature, there's no ananda. there's no bliss. So they have to come down to this world after some time. That principle still applies. I mean, they got benefited, they got liberated. For a long time they're up there. But they come back. So they're still better off. And even when they get killed by Krishna, there is some purification. Even when Arjuna, he was shooting the arrows at soldiers, it's described in the Bhagavatam that by the piercing of the arrows shot by Arjuna, they were getting purified. So in any way, whoever comes in contact with Krishna gets purified. That's satisfying. Gopa and the show, would you like to add?
No mention.
Huh?
No,
it's not clearly mentioned here. Doesn't say for everyone where they got liberated. Doesn't mean everyone who will be killed by Krishna will get liberated. They'll only get, if they're fully absorbed, it's mentioned in the Nectar Devotion, if they're fully absorbed in the thought of the Lord, in the form of the Lord, but if it's with inimical emotions, then they get liberated. But they have to be absorbed in the form of the Lord in order to get liberated. Actually, I was reading about Dharmadhar Maharaj was mentioning in the Waves of Devotion. He was saying that whoever gets killed by the Lord and their mind is absorbed in the form of the Lord, they get liberated. So they have to have this intense absorption. That's what Narad Muni also tells Yudhishthira Maharaj.
But that liberation doesn't mean they get spiritual body.
No, they get Brahman realization. Yeah, those who have inimical thoughts. Whereas we see King Vena was also against Vishnu. But King Vena was not absorbed in thoughts of Vishnu. So, he didn't get Brahman. He was killed by the Brahmanas, he wasn't killed by Krishna. So that's another example. Dhanadhar Maharaj gives that example. So anyway, now, this month is special because there's so many asuras and so we can benefit them by giving them Prabhupada's books. So that will change the face of human society. We might think this is, our effort is insignificant. You know, what can we do? They are so powerful. They are in very prominent positions. But if we just distribute these books to the masses, over a period of time, things will change. And you'll see people will, in different ways, begin to appreciate the Krishna consciousness movement and they will become godly. And these books are time bombs. One day they'll act, be rest assured. And by doing that, our demoniac tendencies will also get purified. So, transformation through distribution, as my spiritual master says. So you get transformed by distributing Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.